just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Schemann and Shepherd, 99.3 ESPN, online at 99.3ESPN.com.
Right back, your hour number three, Schemann and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN. Craig is off this week. It's yours truly, Pete Shepherd, in the house. Chris here as well. We'll check in with Phil Gates in just a second here. We'll get back to your phone calls a little bit later on. We'll have Rick Harrell next hour talk about the business aspect of sports. There's a lot going on. Also, going to get into the Emmys as well. Got to get through some of the nominations, and we'll go through some of the major topics. But Game of Thrones, kicking butt. They led everybody with 22 nominations. Now, Netflix had like 112 overall compared to like 81 for HBO, but that's a different category. We'll get into all of that. But lots going on in the NFL, and not all of it is good. So we'll talk with Phil Gates from ESPN about it as well. And we're getting close to training camp. I think some start on the 17th next week.
Yeah, that's I know the Ravens are the first team to report, and I'd imagine that the Bears would be reporting at about the same time.
And then the 25 camp start on the 24th and the 25th.
Do you have that the AAF, Alliance of American Football, do you have the college teams that each team is affiliated with?
No, I don't. I don't. But anyway, we talked about that last hour. Or just at the end right at the end of the 3 o'clock hour. And it is interesting. This league is, I agree with Chris, this league is going to work. And what's going to be really interesting is to see how the rules are different from the NFL, if they are. Meanwhile, speaking of the rules, speaking of ESPN, let's check in with our buddy Field Yates. And Field Yates, our weekly visit brought to you by Naples Wealth Planning. Head to www.betterplantoday.com and schedule a free consultation at Naples Wealth Planning. Hello, Phil, young man. How you doing, sir?
Pete, I'm doing very well. How are you?
Better than the image of the NFL this week. It is unbelievable. You click on, ESPN site. It's just, if it's not allegations about sexual assault, it's, you got fights in an airport. Okay, granted, Pac-Man was set up. You got, I'm looking at, Kellen Winslow II now is going to have to stand trial. I mean, this is not a Marcell Dareus, obviously, from Jacksonville. Not one, but two women accusing him of sexual assault. I mean, this is unbelievable. And I wonder what's going through Roger Goodell. How much money is he going to have to spend on investigations this week alone, Field?
Well, it's certainly going to be a busy, I would say, fall for Roger Goodell, or maybe late summer for Roger Goodell in the league office investigating these various matters that you have alluded to, Pete. It's been a bad week for the NFL. And the reality is, during this time of the year, it's rare for the NFL to make headlines, period. Unfortunately for the league, all the headlines have basically been very, very negative ones, ones that reflect poorly on the league, and it's why people make perceptions about athletes that are unfair, right? We think of these players, people make sort of these minimalist expectations, or I should say minimalist observations about players, because the reality is that a teeny tiny population of players that is stealing the reputation of the players at large, but the NFL's had a bad week in the court of public opinion. There's no two ways about it.
And let's start with I'll get to LeSean McCoy in a second, but Marcell Dareus facing sexual assault lawsuits from two different women. See, I'm just wondering, one's from January of 2017 before the national title game, but I'm just wondering how Roger Goodell is going to handle all this. And I'm wondering, Field, did Marcell Dareus, according to the league personal conduct policy, you have to report stuff like this whether you think you're innocent or not, if I'm not mistaken. Do you think he told Roger Goodell about this?
That I don't know, and I don't really want to venture a guess, only because I'm wading into unknown territory. Mm-hmm. What I would say, though, is, first of all, I think the NFL's plan of action is this, is they are going to let the legal process run its course. And that has shown itself in many previous cases that the NFL has to go that way. And, I was talking about this to somebody recently, is Reuben Foster for the 49ers was accused of some pretty substantial things recently by a woman who eventually recanted those statements. Those accusations, I should say. So I think that important for the NFL to let the legal process run its course while also keeping a very close eye to the ground on all of this stuff and understanding that what can we do, if anything? And I understand that you can't control every single player. This is not babysitting players, especially grown men. But how do we do our best to avoid these things? And if players are not reporting incidents, then either they're not in tune enough with the policy or the policy is not strict enough to incentivize them to report these things immediately. I mean, a big point was made after Cardinals GM Steve Keim was arrested, I believe, on the night of July 4th and, you know, facing DUI charges. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the team made it very clear that he immediately contacted the organization, in part because you have to. It's a responsibility. But it's been a tough week for the NFL, and I'm just not sure how the tides turn in any substantial way anytime soon.
Yeah, the Cardinals, I mean, there's several stories there with the owner tweeting out, you know, what is political, what isn't. I mean, this is the hypocrisy. You can't expect the players to do one thing and then the owner come out and do something, you know, do a 180 and then claim, well, it's that kind of, it's just my friend. And I don't know. Certainly, it's good. I would just wish we didn't have to talk about all this minutia, but it's crazy that some of these secondary headlines are what's taking over now the NFL. You can't click on NFL or Google it without something, you know, something that it's all about off the field, you know, incidents that are going on. So what's your take on what's going on in Arizona?
Yeah, so I would say, by the way, just again, like, I think in 2 weeks, a lot of what we'll be talking about, I mean, we'll be, you know, sort of goggling over, you know, players running around in T-shirts and shorts again. That's what we do in the NFL, right? I mean, we're going to, you know, take, you know, whatever, some rookie wide receiver makes an unbelievable catch. And here we go, you know, what a great play when he was being defended by nobody. So soon enough, this will turn. Not because those incidents that are taking place right now are not important or great, but because we'll have things to discuss that will be, this is the quietest time of the sports calendar. It just is. And we have the World Cup, but even that is now down, obviously, the final two matches to be played this weekend. As far as the Cardinals go, you know, obviously the words from their owner, Michael Bidwell, are going to be ones that kind of fall on deaf ears, right? I mean, people don't want to hear that, hey, you know, we encourage our players to speak their mind. Just don't do it on game day. It feels like trying to have your cake and eat it too. As it pertains to GM Steve Keim, obviously it's a difficult situation for the team to have to handle. I don't know how they will punish him, if they will punish him, or whether the NFL will punish him as well. But, you know, by the letter of the law, he is subject to punishment as players are. So it would not be a surprise to me if he faces some level of punishment. Maybe that's a suspension. Now, people will argue what is a suspension for a general manager who, you know, could just text someone and say, hey, let's make sure we sign that guy, or let's make sure that we, you know, extend that player or call that guy up from the practice squad. But, you know, the measures are in place, and we'll see how the NFL winds up on these.
Yeah, well, Ursay got suspended before, too, right? So isn't this some, they check your phone. I mean, they have to, you know, you basically have to be, you know, just be out of, get out of the picture for a couple of weeks.
Exactly. You know, I think the most recent example of a GM being suspended was Ray Farmer, the Browns suspension. Mm-hmm. And the Browns GM was suspended because of the texting between him and coaches during a game. And, you know, really, what changes? I mean, you know, some of these guys, a lot of the work they do, you bring your computer home, you got all the film you need, and obviously the NFL is going to discourage them from being a part of the operation. But I think it's entirely impossible to just completely, you know, wash them out of the picture and say, no, you can't, you know, you can't do football matters. So a suspension might be perceived by some to be a suspension in vain. But the NFL does have policies in place, and it's important for them to enact them.
All right, and again, the biggest story of the last 72 hours is LeSean McCoy with the Buffalo Bills, and the latest now is that the former girlfriend telling police she thought that McCoy set her, quote, set her up for Tuesday's home invasion, beating, and robbery. And just, I know your colleague Mike Rodak has been talking about, you've been talking about, I thought you made a great point this week that, you know, Brandon being the GM and, you know, Terry and Kim Pegula, probably, you know, maybe they're around now, but this is one of those limbo weeks where, you know, front office people aren't really around until the next for 10 days. So,
go ahead. Yeah, that's the hard part, Pete, is that, I mean, listen, there are a lot of hard parts to this, but there is no playbook for when a player is accused of some absolutely deplorable things. But when you have something that comes across your radar for about 320 days of the year, maybe even 330 days of the year, the entire operation is in the building together. And you can say, everybody, we got a code red Let's meet in someone's office right now and figure out what we're going to do next. But this is that rare time of the year where coaches and GMs and owners are not in the facility. Brandon Bean, I mean, I don't know this with certainty, but like, you know, I have NFL people that I will text, and they'll respond. I'll text them at 9 a.m. in the morning, and they'll respond at 7 p.m. and say, hey, sorry, I've been with the kids on the beach all day. You know, like, this is the one chance they get to do that. So, you know, the opportunity to huddle up and say, what's our next step, is difficult. You know, and that's even with the player with you in that case. You know, sometimes when something happens, the player's in the building, and you can bring them in and say, what's the deal here? But a lot of difficult obstacles for the Bills to navigate right now. And yeah, there is no, like, it's not as if you can just fall back on, here's what we always do when this happens. You got to take a stand. You got to do so with a lot of moving parts.
Can he be disciplined for that one game under, again, the league personal conduct policy, whether he was involved in any of this or not, for just for failure not to report?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think that what I found here, Pete, is, and I'm sure this is something you've concluded as well, you know, the Jameis Winston case, to me, feels like it checks a lot of the boxes of what merits a six-game suspension.
Yep.
There's admission of guilt. There is things that appear to be a violation of some of the policies that would result in a six-game suspension, and yet he's serving a three-game suspension. I don't really know what it's going to take for a player to actually see the full six games in the domestic violence policy. Now, there have been some other players that I've, you know, there have been some players that either have been, like, out of the league or retired that have, you know, been suspended for multiple games. But really, I mean, all these notable cases that have a domestic violence tie to them seemingly have not resulted in six games, right? Josh Brown, the Giants kicker. Now, he was out of the league already. He never got back into the league, I should say. Jameis Winston, three games. You know, I don't know what to expect with LeSean McCoy, because six games sounds like the ceiling, but not the standard.
No, I think personally, to me, if he's involved in this in any way, shape, or form, if there's evidence to suppose that he was, if it comes out, he's done. I mean, to me, this is no six games here. This is it. He's either, to my opinion, he's either cleared of this or he's out forever. That's what I think.
Well, that could be the case. That could be the case. If, you know, if he's not clear of this, you know, the compelling, you know, listen, and again, none of these are apples to apples. Mm-hmm. None of them are. But you think about someone like Ray Rice, and he never made it back into the league. The difference between Ray Rice and LeSean McCoy is, first of all, there's a video of Ray Rice, and it's despicable, obviously.
Yep.
But, you know, he also was not a good player during his final season. I mean, not a high-level player like LeSean McCoy is. Mm-hmm. LeSean McCoy is one of the, you know, what, eight best running backs in football?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's right up there at the very least. I mean, he's clearly the Bills' best player, and it's not close on offense. So, you know, the difference might be that, you know, Ray Rice may have paid his penance, but just no one's willing to give him a chance. Someone might be willing to give LeSean McCoy a chance, given that, you know, if he's found guilty of this stuff, I'd say no way, no chance. But, you know, if he has to deal with some time, and he's still an effective player, which is a different dynamic than a lot of people are experienced with.
But that picture is out there. And even though it got taken down, everybody has it. I've retweeted it. I mean, that is a vicious. I mean, her face is just brutalized. And what raises more of a red flag with me about this situation, Field, is that her cousin, right? I think her cousin. Forget about the illegal steroids and needles that she alleged, but specifics like he allegedly beat his son for peeing in the bed, the dog and a kidney failure. Beat his dog Henny. I mean, those seem very specific. I mean, you really have to go out of your way to make up stuff like that if it's not true. I'm not saying it is true, but it does raise a gigantic red flag for me.
Pete, a lot of the signs are ugly right now. They are. There's just no two ways about it. We're going to reserve. I'm going to reserve judgment until we get to much more clarity. But yeah, it's there's some scary signs right now, and this is one that I know everybody who I've spoken with. This could be a long, long road ahead to see what the end result is.
Well, I'm trying to think. You know what we can. Let me ask you this. Let's get to some positive stuff here. Is there any one particular camp that you are looking forward to seeing? You know, again, what do we really learn in camp? I don't know, but what team? Not the Patriots, not the Steelers, not the Eagles. But what team out, not Kansas, but what team out there are you looking at that could maybe be this year's Jaguars?
That's a good question. What could be this year's Jaguars? You know, I think a couple of teams that come to mind, you know, I think Tennessee's got a chance to be very good, but it all pivots on whether their quarterback can make that next step, which would be Marcus Mariota.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're looking at a team that I think could rise, maybe somewhat quietly, I think Detroit's got a chance to be pretty good. The biggest impediment is their division. The division's so good with Minnesota and Green Bay that, you know, there's a chance they could be the third best team in their division and still only win eight games or seven games. But I do believe that Detroit is a team that might be better on paper than we realize, and the quarterback is really, really good. I don't know about, you know, playing in the conference championship game, but I do believe that Detroit could be better than people want to give credit for right now.
I totally agree. My partner Craig Sheeman is off this week, a lifelong Lions fan. And we always have this debate,
you know.
We always have this debate because he knows I'm from New England, so he's like, "Well, you haven't had to suffer." And I'm like, "Well, yeah," but my feeling is always with teams like the Lions is, I mean, they went through their 0-16 season. We have gone through 1-15s, 2-14s, the Lisa Olsen stuff. A lot of bad thing, bad stadium with a pay. I've been through all that, but I've also been through more heartbreak than the average Lions fan has, you know. And I don't take anything for granted now. So, is there any truth? Now, is there something to my argument? Next time I see my partner, he's like, "Well, you know, you can't relate to what we've gone through." I'm like, "Well, you have to get to that point." And then Wayne Font said, "All right, you know, losing a heartbreaker once every 5 years, which Detroit really has not done." I mean, is there some truth to that? You know what I'm talking about? The pain and suffering that I've gone through. I'm sorry, no Lions fan can compare to that.
I mean, listen. Here's the reality: is that every person deals with, every sports fan deals with victory and defeat. But the funny thing is, like, the agony that some Lions fans felt during that 0-16 season might be comparable to, like, just to borrow the drinking analogy, like, there are Red Sox fans who think that the sky is falling if the team misses the playoffs. The Lions didn't win a game that year back in 2005 or whatever it was, whatever year that was, 2007. You know?
Yep.
So, like, everything is about how you handle it. Whereas there, you know, like, there might be Jaguars fans that feel like last year was better than the Eagles. You know, I mean, I'm probably speaking facetiously there, but, like, you know, they're probably Jaguars fans who feel like they won the Super Bowl, whereas Patriots fans, you know, can barely utter the word Super Bowl after last year's game and how it played out.
What about, I know we've chatted about this before, but has your mind changed at all? Have you heard about anything? The Hall of Fame game coming up between the Bears and Ravens in, I think, 3 weeks, 3 weeks or 20 days from today. And it's the first exhibition game, a Hall of Fame game I've looked forward to in a long, long time, simply because I am intrigued at how the referees are going to attempt to call this new helmet-to-helmet rule. And has your opinion changed? I know they tried to back off of it when I was on vacation last week a little bit, some officials, but has your mind changed at all about the officiating and especially new officials since four of them have gone?
Yeah, my mind hasn't changed. I just think that I'm, like you, anticipating this game much more than I would the average Hall of Fame game, right? I mean, I'm expecting this to be one where, you know, we actually are watching it with more interest than just how do the starters look for the seven plays that they play. I mean, I'm looking forward to it in the sense that, like, how does the helmet rule work? How does the kick, you know, all these different stipulations that are at least either trial balloons or full-time changes, how do they impact the game? How do the new kickoff rules work? There's a lot of stuff that I'm definitely looking forward to that could impact the game greatly.
And a couple more questions. Again, Phil Yates joining us from ESPN. Bill Polian, your colleague, and had some, I think, I don't know about you, but I think the Alliance of American Football is going to work. I really do. And I'm intrigued by, I saw today the, you know, the contracts and the player allocation, the combine and draft numbers, all that stuff. What are your thoughts about the Alliance of American Football?
I'm excited for it. And I think that, well, one of the things about the NFL, or trying to compete with the NFL is doing it. And, you know, the way you do it, in my opinion, is not to just zig in every way that the NFL zags. It's to try to create a close facsimile of it while also not stretching yourself too thin. And, like, the player allocation pool, not making guys that live in Arizona have to fly once a week to, you know, Detroit to play in a game because that's where their team is. And having fixed contracts, I think it's smart. Rather than trying to become another NFL, NFL 2.0, accept what you are. You're a developmental league that can probably cater to players that aren't quite ready for NFL rosters or guys that are on the fringe of NFL rosters and, you know, were previously on one and trying to work their way back to one. I think it's smart. They've got a lot of former NFL people, a lot of pedigree there. So I think that it's got a chance to be successful because we know the appetite to watch football is always going to be there.
I know Bill said, you know, each of the teams will have at least five college players become theirs, four designated NFL teams and a CFL team. Just as an example, I don't know if you know off the top of your head, just say the Orlando team, for instance, coached by Steve Spurrier. Now, do they have access to Florida, Florida State, Miami, FAU, FIU? Is that how that's going to work?
I would imagine because it is supposed to be regional. I don't know if the regional side of it is where a player is from or where he went to school. But I think on a college front, yes, it would be, hey, you have access to whatever schools are within 350 miles of you. Or maybe it's they just designate states. Or maybe they, you know, make the Orlando team only give them Florida because there's so much football within the state, rather than giving them Florida and Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and everything else in the region there. That would just turn into SEC, grad program there. So it'll be really interesting. I'm in on it. I really trust a lot of people that are involved with it. And I think it's got a chance to give us something that we crave during the off season. Because as much as we all like to have some quiet time and spend some time decompressing from the NFL season, I can speak basically universally when I say we all miss football.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think what is interesting, too, it certainly seems like it's going to be the AAA for the NFL because it looks like you're going to be able to leave and go to the NFL if you, quote-unquote, get called up. I kind of like that aspect of it. I'm sure the NFL does, too.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think it's, again, managing expectations, not trying to be a competitor, not trying to be what the XFL was when it went the first time around, when it just basically said, let's do everything in the anti-NFL way and we'll take it over. No, it's not going to work. It just isn't. I mean, it was too okey for its own good. Now, I think the XFL will be much more successful the second time around. But the first time around, the NFL, I think the XFL realized, like they would probably tell you, Vince McMahon would be able to admit all the things that went awry.
All right, quick question, serious question about the Emmy Awards, okay? I'm not sure what kind of shows that you like or when you're not working, which is like every day, it seems like 24-7. But just the drama series that were nominated, The Americans, The Crown, Game of Thrones, Handmaid's Tale, Stranger Things, This Is Us, Westworld. Any of those that you've seen, that you like, that you've been watched in your prediction, just on the drama series? Are you a Game of Thrones person?
I've watched Game of Thrones. I'm not head over heels like everybody else is.
Ugh.
I thought This Is Us was fantastic, though. Are you a big Game of Thrones guy?
Big Game of Thrones guy.
Yeah, I mean, I thought This Is Us was fantastic. I really like Game of Thrones, but I wasn't like as hardcore as everybody else. And the final season will be exciting. We're throwing Billions in there. I think Billions is a really good drama as well.
It is.
But maybe that's nominated for a different category. Really good show on Showtime, obviously.
Yeah. All right, Field, you're the man. And what are you up to this weekend?
Let's see, off of Dallas for the National Fantasy Football Convention, which should be fun.
I meant to just real quick about that, because the officials are getting together, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
That's right, yeah, should be good.
Oh, we'll talk about that next week. That's going to be really, really interesting. All right, Phil, thanks a lot, a pleasure. Enjoy Dallas, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Sounds good, Pete, take care.
Take care. Phil Yates, his appearance on Sheeman and Shepherd brought to you by Naples Wealth Planning. Check out www.betterplantoday.com and schedule a free consultation to our friends at Naples Wealth Planning. All right, quick break. 239-337-3776. Going to continue the football conversation, really focus on Buffalo and what's going on with LeSean McCoy and the rest of the Bills. Matthew Fairburn going to join us from The Athletic. He covers the Bills. He's up next on Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN.
This is Sheeman and Shepherd, 99.3 ESPN, online at 99.3ESPN.com. Sheeman and Shepherd.
Yeah, back here, Sheeman and Shepherd. Greg's off this week. So yours truly, Pete, hosting. Chris in the house as well. We'll get back to the phone calls in a little bit at 239-337-3776. Lots going on in the NFL today. Marcell Dareus, the latest and not a great headline once again for the NFL. It's been a bad week for PR in the NFL. I mean, every time you pick up you click on the NFL, it's just sexual assault charges, fights in airports. Kellen Winslow is not going to have to stand trial. A judge ruled there's enough evidence, even though he's out of the league right now. But Marcell Dareus facing sexual assault lawsuits from two different women. And of course, LeSean McCoy. and what's going on with him, and, you know, more details keep coming out. Still, he has not been named in anything yet, except, well, he's been allegedly named by the cousin and the girlfriend. But trying to gain some perspective on this and where everything is at, joining us right now is Matthew Fairburn, who covers the Bills for The Athletic, joins us here on Sheeman and Shepherd. Hey, Matthew, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very well. Very well. So the latest with LeSean McCoy, and I just saw, I retweeted your police report that you had out, and the girlfriend saying that she was set up. But what is the latest, if anything, that's come out? Even the last few minutes, have you heard?
Yeah, the latest that we're getting at the moment is that there were three separate times before the home invasion on Tuesday that police were called to McCoy's residence in Milton, Georgia, dating back to July of 2017. So clearly this relationship was a bit contentious at times. In July of 17, McCoy was trying to get his now ex-girlfriend's belongings out of the house. She, you know, he was told he had to go through a formal eviction process. But it seems as if their relationship was sort of on again, off again, because in a later time when, you know, police were called to the house, McCoy's mom was removing his things from the premises and saying that McCoy was letting this woman live at his house. So that sort of into the whole, he's been trying to get this woman evicted for a year, because clearly that hasn't been a consistent pattern. It's been.
Yeah, Matthew, you're cutting out a little bit. Did we lose him? Yeah, put him on hold. We'll get back in action right now. But, yes, and as you just said, Milton, Georgia police have released three reports of incidents when police were called to LeSean McCoy's home for domestic disputes in July of 2017, April of 2018, and June of 2018. No evidence of violence in the case. We've got Matthew back. Can you hear me, Matthew?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay,
there you
go.
All right here.
Yeah, got you now. So no evidence in those violence in any case. However, I wasn't sure. Maybe you are familiar with the. I know in a lot of states that if there's a call about domestic violence, an arrest has to be made, even if you get bailed out for $25 an hour later. I'm not sure if that's the case in Milton, Georgia. First question, and part two of that is, did he report any of those three incidents to Roger Goodell as he's supposed to by the personal conduct policy?
That second question is a good one, and that may come up as the NFL is investigating this. These were considered domestic disputes and not necessarily domestic violence, since there was no physical violence in any of these cases. But I found it interesting that McCoy made a point to note to police that he was afraid of false accusations and that he wanted to be careful about being around her because he knew the climate surrounding domestic violence in the NFL and what that would mean for his career. But really strange sort of the timeline as you start to piece it together. And then we've got a more detailed log of what happened on Tuesday as well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of bizarre, you know, little details that are trickling out. But your point there on that second question is going to be key, because while there's a burden of proof in a court of law, the NFL has shown that they don't necessarily need a charge or a conviction in order to discipline a player or to put him on the exempt list. So if the NFL senses that there's any wrongdoing here, they don't necessarily need the same burden of proof that's on prosecutors. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be an interesting, you know, part of this whole deal once the NFL gets further along in their investigation.
Yeah, and we talked about, I remember bringing up the example yesterday, and, you know, we'll see if he's headed that way. I think he is. I mean, I certainly think he is. The NFL is, you know, the problem I have with Roger Goodell is just such as explain anything. I mean, the Jameis Winston stuff to me is ridiculous, how he didn't get six games. I don't understand it. He's so obsessed with the image of the league that, but he continues to have speculation and, you know, people are wondering because he doesn't explain things thoroughly. He doesn't tell you why or how they came to their conclusions. I don't understand it. There's too many smart people out there, journalists like yourself and others. You're going to see through it. Or then you got people like, you know, TMZ, and they're never wrong. They get a hold of everything. I don't know if they pay off, but it's going to come out eventually. All this stuff is going to come out. Why not just be up front with everybody all the time? I don't understand what goes on at 345 Park Avenue. It's so gosh darn frustrating.
Well, and that's the main reason why, you know, when people, you know, are asking me what I think will happen here, it's hard to say because the NFL is pretty unpredictable on these situations. They haven't established a clear pattern for how they go about things. Some of these investigations take a long time. The discipline oftentimes is inconsistent, as you noted in the Jameis Winston case. I mean, it seemed pretty cut and dry that that would be a six-gamer, and then it wasn't. So, you know, how the NFL is going to handle this is really anybody's guess. And like I said, they don't need the same level of proof that a court of law does, and that's what makes it so unpredictable is they can seemingly do what they want when they want to based on their own investigation. So that's where, you know, if you're LeSean McCoy, if you're the Bills, you're kind of left in limbo because you don't know if he could be placed on the exempt list or when that could happen. Training camp opens in 2 weeks.
And that's going to be my next question is that, you know, training camp's open in 2 weeks. And again, we're speaking with Matthew Fairburn from The Athletic, covers the Buffalo Bills. If you tried to reach out to Brandon Bean, the GM, or Sean McDermott, Terry and Kim Pegula, I know this is one of those weeks where not everybody's around. One of the few times during the off season where families have a chance to get out of here and go, you know, do their own thing on vacation. But I got to imagine, I mean, the NFL has a bad habit of waiting and waiting and waiting on stuff like this. But have you been able to reach out or get a hold of anybody in the Buffalo Bills front office?
Not to this point. They've got, you know, the team spokesman released a statement on Tuesday that they were reviewing the matter and, you know, that they've been in touch with McCoy and they've keeping quiet other than that, which is basically what you would expect them to do. But at some point, look, the Bills are going to be put in a really tricky, you know, spot here because at some point, unless LeSean McCoy is quickly charged or quickly, you know, dismissed of any wrongdoing, then everything's going to fall on the Bills. Because they're going to have to make a decision whether they want this guy practicing in training camp while this investigation is hanging over his head. They're going to have to make a decision whether they want this guy wearing a Buffalo Bills uniform while he's tied to some serious, pretty serious, you know, allegations. So it's going to end up being a spot where they have to address this at some point because I think it's going to end up being on them. I don't think they're going to get the easy way out where, you know, things move quickly. With all the moving parts and all the information that's come out in the last few days, it seems clear to me that this is going to go on for a little while. And LeSean McCoy is prepared for that because he just hired the same attorney who represented Ray Lewis back in 2000 when he was investigated as part of a double murder investigation. So I think, you know, the Bills are going to end up, you know, they're not saying too much right now. But eventually they're going to be put on the spot on this thing unless they make a swift decision themselves, which isn't really in their nature.
In the court of public opinion, though, hiring Don Samuel, and again, as you mentioned, he got Ray Lewis off in 2000, the murder charges, he represented Ben Roethlisberger back in the day when those sexual allegations were going on. In the court of public opinion, just because he went after such a high-profile attorney, does that make him look somewhat guilty in the eyes of the general public, you think?
In a way, it does, but you're also talking about a guy who has, you know, a lot of financial means and is being accused of very serious things. And so why not go out and get the best of the best? And I think that's part of it. But I think more of what it indicates is that he recognizes that this isn't going to go away. And it's not going to be something that he can easily brush off and that he does need proper representation and really good representation to make sure nothing goes wrong for him. So I don't think it's a situation where he's not that he hired. I think he hired the best guy for the job, knowing that this is a pretty serious situation and one that could drag on for a little while.
Now, do you think at some point, though, as we just kind of mentioned, but if this snowballs a little bit more, even if he's technically not named in it, could you see the Pegula family saying to Brandon Bean, just cut him. We're not going through this right now. We've got a new quarterback here. We've got Josh Allen, you know, and we're just not going to go through this right now. And how would that look?
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, everything's going to end up being on the table the longer this thing drags on, because you have to ask yourself if you want that guy running around on the field in a Buffalo Bills uniform and representing your organization. And that's a tough line to walk, especially right now with it being so early on in this investigation. So, you know, they're going to have to make that decision eventually, because unless the court, you know, makes it for him, or the league makes it for him by putting him on the exempt list, then the Bills are going to be in a spot where they're going to have to decide whether this guy should be on the field for them. Because, you know, like you said, the court of public opinion is a real thing. And, you know, you're talking about one of the most influential women in the league in Kim Pegula, mm-hmm. who's also the president of this organization. So, you know, you wonder if, you know, that they're going to act quickly and say, hey, you know, let's not let this thing drag on and let this guy be on our team. Let's see if, you know, we can just move on and cut ties and make a statement that way. I mean, this is a guy, he just turned 30 years old today. You wonder how many years he has left in him anyways. And, you know, if it's worth the trouble. And that's a question that I'm sure they're asking themselves right now behind closed doors.
And then the other part of that, the other layer to the Sunny, is if they do follow through with that, just say, then what is the NFLPA doing to Morris Smith? They're going to cry, you know, it's not justified. He wasn't convicted. He wasn't this. He wasn't that. His name isn't even. It's just an allegation. But so this could get, it already is ugly. My gut feeling is it's going to get a lot worse no matter what happens.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's so many moving parts. There's so many parties involved, not just in the investigation, but then in what's going to happen after that, whether it's the Bills, the NFL, the NFLPA, you know, McCoy and his agent. I mean, there's a lot going into this, and it's one of those things where, you know, especially given how quick the reaction was on Tuesday, I've, you know, tried to say to people that it's something where you have to let the facts come out.
Sure.
And you have to let the legal system do its work. But there is a sort of a clock on this, right? Because mm-hmm. the Bills report to training camp on July 25th. They have their first practice on July 26th. And at that point, you can't hide from it anymore. Even if it's still ongoing, you can hide behind the, you know, oh, we're letting the legal system play out. But that's not going to suffice. People are going to want more answers than that, you know, when Sean McDermott steps up to the podium to give his press conference at the beginning of training camp, as he does. So you need to have answers. You need to be prepared. This is, like you said, this is a time of year when usually these guys are able to step away and they're able to, you know, just kind of unplug a little bit before getting ready for the grind of the season. But right now, that's all over. They have something, you know, a major crisis that they need to handle and need to be ready for a whole bunch of different scenarios when training camp opens, because there's just a lot of moving parts in this whole situation.
All right, Matthew, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out of a busy day, and you do great stuff, and I'll keep retweeting stuff as you put it out there. It's great stuff, and we'll have you on again soon. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, it's Matthew Fairburn from The Athletic, covers the Buffalo Bills, does a great job. And part of Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN. The phone number, 239-337-3776, if you want to comment on anything Matthew just talked about. It's a very, very serious situation. It can go in a lot of ways, and I think it's interesting that he talked about, you know, the Pegula family could just kind of say, look, we're not doing this. I mean, maybe you're guilty, maybe you're not, but just the fact that the allegation is out there is enough for us to say bye-bye, in which case, you know, DeMora Smith and the NFLPA is going to counter that with, oh, yeah, try it. And it's going to be more litigated. I think this is a freaking mess. And obviously,
there is the side to it, though, where NFLPA, do you really want to you want to go after the NFL on this? Right, I get it that the relationship is awful between the two, but is this the suspension that you want to go after?
We'll see if more information comes out. That's what we have to wait for.
Yes.
You know, we'll have to wait to find out if these quote-unquote dudes are really button men that went there. All right, quick break. When we come back, we'll discuss what Matthew said and a lot more. Again, the phone number, 239-337-3776. Still got Emmy Awards to discuss as well. Top of the hour, Rick Horror will join us, our sports business expert. Lots to discuss with him also. All part of Sheeman and Shepherd on a Thursday right here on 99.3 ESPN.
Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. Call or text us at 337-3776 and listen wherever you are on the 99.3 ESPN app. Now, it's Sheeman and Shepherd.
I'm back here at Sheeman and Shepherd, 99.3 ESPN, always live and local Monday through Friday, 2 to 6 p.m. 99.3 ESPN. Phone number 239-337-3776. Break is off. We'll be back on Monday. Christo in the house. We had a nice conversation with Matthew Fairburn. And I think the biggest question that I have, and he confirmed it, is that Milton, Georgia police released three reports of incidents when police were called to LaShawn McCoy's home for domestic disputes in July of 2017, April of 2018, and June of 18. But no evidence of violence in any case. However, doesn't matter. You got to report it because of the personal conduct policy to the NFL. And I don't think he did. I don't think Matthew thinks he did. And that could come into play at the very least a one game suspension, or maybe they lump it all, if they lump it all together, or you could make a case that's three separate violations. Is that three games? Or if some of this other stuff is, he gets linked to, he may be done forever, or it could be the other. I mean,
that's where I'm leaning on all this. If a portion of this is true,
a portion of this, he's done forever. He's
It's done.
Yep.
He's done. I mean, you think about if this is true. I want to keep clarifying. I'm not placing guilt on LaShawn McCoy.
True. Yeah.
Right. I feel like I got to kind of throw that asterisk in there every time we talk about it. Yeah. But if it comes out that you had the idea and then followed through with the idea to hire goon, hitman, whatever you want to call them. I don't care about the terminology. If that came out, you're done. And you're not just done in this league. You are done from ever getting another endorsement in your life, another job of any sort, and you should go to prison.
And you also have to worry about, if you're LaShawn McCoy, if he were involved in this, allegedly, in any way, shape, or form, by hiring your guys, one or both may flip on you to get a better deal.
Yeah.
If they're going to jail, trust me, you're going to jail with them. So it all depends on what can be proven or not proven, but this is going to involve cell phones. It's going to involve, you know, all sorts of communiques and email. God only knows what else. But if there's three separate already from a couple of years ago, that the police had to go to the house three times in a year and a half, then that's that's an issue right there. Even though there was no violence reported, I agree, but it's still an issue.
And now, like Matthew said, the Buffalo Bills are faced with a difficult decision.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult decision. The same decision, well, maybe not the same, but a very similar decision that the Glazers are faced with now with Jameis Winston.
Mm-hmm. And now, oh, I knew this would happen. Maybe we can get this after five. But the 911 call is out there.
Oh,
TMZ's got it.
All right.
TMZ's got it. So we'll get it for you. We'll play it. We'll play it at some point. Got to take a quick break right now, though, because Rick Harrow is going to join us as well coming up at 5:05, and lots of sports business stuff to talk about. And your phone calls as well. And Emmys to talk about, too, at some point. 239-337-3776. 239-337-3776. Rick Harrow up next at the top of the hour after Chris's Sports Center right here. Sheeman and Shepherd rolls on. Hour number four next, 99.3 ESPN.